Hey guys, welcome back to part two of Tara's story. If you haven't listened to part one, go ahead and do that now and then hop back over. In about 20 minutes into this episode, you'll find out why we've been freaking out so much. So we really hope you enjoy this episode. We really hope that you can benefit from it and that it inspires you to speak out against anyone or anything that's harming you and to stand up to them. So without further ado, let's get into it.
That's where we left off, was mom left stepdad, left work clothes on her back, never went home on his birthday because my friend and I were filing police reports. Like, I had a police officer come out to my work and he had someone come to his home and we filed reports to get a warrant for his arrest because he was harassing us and threatening us and sending horrible messages to my friend and his bandmates and make comments on Facebook. His Facebook has to be like talking about my dad and being like, shame that her dad doesn't know that she's a fucking whore, that she's selling her body for drugs. Yeah. Which I'm not selling my body for drugs. I don't even want to, like, I don't want to fuck anybody, you know? Like, leave me alone.
Don't touch me.
And but this was after the point that he started doing that, after your mom already knew what was going on. Like, he wasn't doing it before.
Yeah.
She was aware.
I think he started saying things like that after she had left. So building up to that was him. She didn't know that he was sending threatening messages to my friend and his band, and that she had been like obsessing over him and figuring out who his family was and stuff like that. So when she did leave, that's when we really started monitoring what he was doing. He was posting all over Facebook and stuff and like calling her, texting her, threatening her, calling, texting my friend. After he figured out that we had reports out for him, he stopped messaging us, but he kept messaging her.
Isn't that, like, can I just make another point of how crazy this is to me? Like, the only person in this story that actually has, like, anything to do with nudity, you know, like, has a photo of them naked on Facebook, but you, who have not done a single thing, is being called the whore.
Like, and I've been sexually traumatized by this man constantly calling me a whore from before I even lost my virginity, before I'd ever even kissed, like, somebody. So, you know, before I was, like, a perfectly normal functioning person, or, you know, like, everyone's a little fucked up, but I wasn't fucked up in that area as any more than any other little girl is, because, you know, and it's, society's weird about that.
Yeah.
And then he ended up instilling this horrible fear and phobia and anxiety around human sexuality that I did not have before, even though I wasn't even participating in it yet. And so now, even to this day, as an adult, I have horrible, you know, setbacks in that area. It's actually something that has been problems in relationships and problems for me as a person, not being able to feel comfortable and like it's okay to be a sexual being like humans are. It's totally normal and natural. And my conscious mind knows that, but my body and my subconscious do not agree. And it's because this man just demonized me. He basically was punishing me for entering puberty. He punished me for leaving childhood, you know? And I've talked to one of my friends about this, and she's like, he punished you because he couldn't have you. He punished you because you grew to be a beautiful young woman or whatever, and he couldn't control you and couldn't have you. And because, like, it's just so hard to explain what it's like to live in a house with someone that you know. And this is how I knew that I needed to file a police report against him. I knew always after he like hit the crazy button and never went back, I knew always that this man wanted to fuck me and kill me. I just always knew that one day he was going to try to do that. I absolutely knew it. And so how do you function as a young woman trying to have healthy functioning relationships, you know, and just be a person and fall in love with people and try to love yourself when this person has demonized you and punished you for just growing up? You know?
Yeah.
It's It's weird.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's not, this doesn't so much matter to the nature of your story, so I'm not trying to be grotesque just for understanding, but
I don't care.
You said that he did say things like, let me lick that makeup off of you, or come
up with your bikinis on.
Yeah, but did he ever make like a physical pass at you to try?
So there was, he would always try to get me to like come over and give him a kiss on his cheek and sit in his lap. And there was one time in particular, like, he and my grandpa and I were, like, standing around the computer, and there was, like two chairs, and not, like, they were sitting and I was standing. He's like, oh, come here, sit on my leg so you can see what's on the computer. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And when I did that, his hand was on my back, and it started sliding down a little mm-hmm. too far. So I got up. I just got up and walked away. He was always, like, mentally and verbally fixated on me sexually anyway, and then he would... this is where it was like hard for me to explain how I knew what I knew instinctively, intuitively to be true, because living in the same house with him, I didn't even realize it until not too long ago, but I would have to map out and plan out how I was going to navigate throughout the house, especially when it was just me and him in the house, but even with my mom and other family members there, because if I wanted to leave, I would hardly ever leave my room, but I would have to like go to the bathroom and eat. If I wanted to leave my room and go to the kitchen and eat, I had to make sure that he was in the living room or not in the kitchen or not in, because there was like a very narrow part of the hallway, like between there was a wall and the counter, and there's a very narrow part to get between there into the main kitchen area mm-hmm. from the dining room and stuff. And so sometimes like I would be walking through the house and I'd be trying to get to the kitchen to like eat something, and he would like corner me and like pin me in these small little areas, and he would do it right in front of family members and no one even noticed mm-hmm. and he would just like always put his hands on me, like he like grabbed my arms and shoulders really hard and just like kind of like jiggle me, and just like he would always like try to put his hands on me in some way mm-hmm. and I even tried to express to my mom like I don't want him to touch me, but I couldn't explain why I was so upset that he was touching me, because he wasn't like grabbing my ass, but he was cornering me and making sure to pin himself and me closely together in these confined spaces mm-hmm. when I was just trying to go about my business and make sure he put a hand on me. And he'd always, like, grab me really, really hard and, like, just some kind of weird, aggressive, controlling thing.
Yeah.
And combined with all the things that he had ever said to me about, like, licking makeup off my face and show me what you're wearing and...
Yeah, which I'm not belittling that at all just yeah. by asking the other question. Like, I completely okay. understand that is just as
it's
traumatizing.
Weird. It's really weird. It's just like all these little things adding up over time that just like I don't know how to explain how this isolated incident isn't right, but surely all these things combined don't it's weird, doesn't make sense. From all the constantly being concerned about my, or not concerned, just obsessed with my sexual activity, my existence as a no longer child female person, to what I'm wearing, to who I'm dating, to what the backs of my legs look like, to constantly trying to put a hand on me in some way, you know?
Yeah.
I just knew.
For sure. That makes sense.
And all he ever talked about was just, like, violently grotesque, weird sexual things all the time. He was, somehow, any conversation or situation or argument would always go back to that place. It always circled right back around to some kind of sexual thing.
So what happens at this point? Your mom is living with you and your grandma.
Yeah, so my mom leaves because of that and other things. We're living with my grandmother. And all this stuff starts happening, like, in this week. So, you know, I come back from New Orleans on Monday. By, like, Wednesday, it's his birthday and he freaks out. And we file the police report. My mom leaves. The warrant was going to be out for his arrest by Friday. I think my mom came back in town either Thursday or Friday. And, by Saturday, like, we had even, like, called around friends, like, hey, can we, like, come stay with you? And they were like, I'm sorry, it's just not safe for our family, like, we love Oof. You, but we don't want to have you in the house because we don't want this man coming after us, which I totally agree, totally understand. And so we stayed at my grandfather's house on Saturday night, and my mom's actually supposed to be writing a book about this whole thing, and I really want her to name it Brains on the Ceiling because of this night.
Wow.
And I'm like, it's kind of as a joke, but also kind of not as a joke, because like Brains on the Ceiling is kind of a great title, in my humble opinion. She wants to call it something else, way longer, whatever. But so Saturday, he is like texting her, and my stepdad is texting her, and we're at my grandfather's house in the kitchen, and he's basically talking about how, like, don't let two stupid kids get in the way of our love, and, like, you shouldn't, like, don't leave me, I love you, and basically blaming everything on me. And he was saying things in a way that made it sound like he was gonna kill me. Like, he was specifically saying things to pin all of the fault on me and how I ruined their lives and ruined his life and ruined their marriage and took everything away from them, and everything's my fault, and that he needs, that I need to be taken care of, basically. And so they're texting, and at some point he says, you know, I'm sorry for the mess. And my mom's like, yeah, this is a mess. It really is. And he's like, no, I mean the mess you're going to have to clean up when you come home, brains on the ceiling. And so, and he calls her and leaves this voicemail that says, I love you, goodbye. And so he makes us think that he's going to kill himself. So, and it was pretty clever because he wanted to make us look crazy. So, we think he's going to kill himself. And I think that night I had already called my work and I was like, I need to take a leave of absence because it's not safe for me to come to work. This, like, I had, I think we hadn't gotten me a new car yet. Maybe he had, I don't know. At some point, basically, I had gotten a new car because he stole my car and gave it to his granddaughter. Like, he just, the one that he had taken the keys when I gotten home. And so he was coming and driving by my work and trying to disguise his truck by putting a freaking light on it, like as a utility truck. It's like, dude, I know it's you. You just put a light on the top of the truck. But he drove by and, like, got my license plate number. I ran my license plate number to make sure that it was my car. And the place that I worked at, I was a receptionist, and it was, like, all glass front. I was right in the front, and there's all these windows. And so, basically, he could come up and just shoot me. And he had already told my mom, like, in bed a few nights before, like, I'd rather shoot her in the head with this .45, because he always had a gun on him, shoot her in the head with this .45 than let her be a whore. So I was very exposed, and so I had to call that night and, like, say, hey, I need to take a leave of absence off work because I think this person's going to kill me, because he's basically saying that he is. And then he goes and says he's going to kill himself. I'm like, well, fuck. So the next day, we don't know what the fuck's going on. And we called the Morgan County Police and, like, had them basically do a health check or whatever it's called to go see at the house, see if he had killed himself. Wellness check, yeah. The police get there and he's acting like everything's hunky-dory. Everything's fine. They're nuts, like, trying to make us look crazy. And then he texts my mom and says, where's my Chromebook? Because we had gotten him arrested, like, Saturday. I think it was Saturday day. Mm-hmm. So all that stuff at my grandfather's house was, like, that night after. So the warrant went into place, and he had gotten arrested because he drove, like, we knew that he was, like, driving around my friend's, the guy that he didn't like, my friend. I'll just refer to as my friend. We were at my grandmother's house. There's a knock on the door. It's my stepdad. We don't answer. He leaves, and I call my friend and say, I think he's coming to your house. Mm-hmm. And so we were right. So my friend's sitting by the window watching, and my stepdad drives by in my car.
Oh, my gosh.
And he sees him. So my friend gets in the car, and
But this is before he gets arrested.
Yes, this is the arresting story.
Okay.
So this is Saturday. So he drives past my friend's house. My friend's looking out the window waiting for him because I was like, hey, I think he's coming to your place next, because we didn't answer because fuck that. And so he sees him drive by my car, and he goes and jumps out and gets in his car and starts following him, because if you have a warrant out for someone's arrest, the police aren't just gonna go like, yeah, we'll go get him.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's like you have to get pulled over for speeding or get a ticket or, like, happen to just get in trouble for something, and then they'll see, oh, there's a warrant, you know?
Yeah.
So my friend was like, well, I'm just going to follow him. So he gets in his car and starts following him. And they end up in this wild goose chase following each other around downtown. And it ends up getting mixed up where now my stepdad's following him and he's following my stepdad. And then my stepdad's following him again. And my friend's on the phone with the police saying, I've got this guy following me, or I'm following him, and I've got a warrant out for his arrest. Oh. And I need you to come get him. And so eventually ends up being, they pull over in, like, the Checkers or what, there's like a restaurant, like, across the street from where my friend used to live, like, off Governor's. And so they pull into that parking lot and, like, park kind of, like, parallel to each other. And my friend's still on the phone with the police, and they're going to be there soon. And my stepdad goes, I just want to talk, no guns.
What?
Like,
so no one had even mentioned guns.
No, no one had mentioned guns, but he's armed all the time. He always had a gun in the bedroom, in the living room, in the truck, in the shed, in the kitchen. There was a gun in every drawer. There was a gun in every car. There was a gun in every pocket all the time. And so it's like, who says that? Like, I just want to talk, no guns. Because that totally means this is not going to go wrong at all. And so the police show up and arrest him and whatever. But the thing is about my stepdad is... he's very charming and charismatic, and so he can turn the crazy on and off whenever he wants. Mm-hmm. And he can try to schmooze the police and be like, good old boy, like, oh, you know, hey, how you doing? And be like friends, mm-hmm. hunky-dory with them, like, everything's cool. And the police are like, yeah, we're just trying to do our job, you know, like, you know,
oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry to impose on you. And your
Yeah. So the reason that he asked, like, where's my Chromebook the next day after telling us he was going to kill himself was because when he got arrested that earlier that day, we had not been able to go home this whole week. He had everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we get notified that he's getting arrested. My friend tells me. And they're like, someone needs to come pick up his car. And we were like, fuck that. We're going to the house because mm-hmm. we don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And the pets are up there. So we have like a window of like 45 minutes because he can bail out. So we... rush up to the house, are running in and out from the house to the car, packing up everything we possibly can. The first thing I grabbed was my cat. Mm-hmm. It was the first thing, or at least one of the cats. The other one I left because he was fine. He was older, and my stepdad would he loved animals and he was going to take care of them, but I was concerned about like my mm-hmm. pet in particular because I thought maybe he would hurt her or something. I don't know. I just missed my cat. So the first thing I did was grab my cat, and then we go in and grab all the things that we can, and we start grabbing anything that could be evidence. So we got his laptop, his Chromebook, because we don't know what's
on there. Who
knows
what's on there, yeah.
Yeah, so we grabbed that, and it's, like, 45 minutes, and I ended up, like, almost breaking my toe, because it was, like, cold winter, and there's, like, a bucket of water that had frozen, and then, like, hit my toe on it, and I'm, like, limping around, trying to get stuff in the car. And then
with the cat under your arm.
And with a cat, and then, like, we just, like, get the hell out of Dodge and go back to my grandma's with our stuff, and by that time, he had bailed out, because he had a check that my mom had written, because my stepdad had, he's totaled one of my cars before, and then he got me a shitty replacement car that was horrible, and he was supposed to go find me a new car that wasn't shitty. So he had a check, a blank check that my mom had signed in his pocket that he used to bail out of jail. And then she saw that money had cleared from her account, and she didn't know if he had hacked it or whatever. Not that he's smart enough to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up, like, had him arrested, got our shit. He bails out. Something's wrong with our account. There's lots of money in there. Well, not lots, but, you know, enough. I think it was, like, college money or something of mine, or there was some, for some reason, there was, like, $11,000 in there or mm-hmm. whatever. So, we go to the credit union, and we're like, we don't know what's going on. This guy's crazy. He's after us. We need to close down all of the accounts and move all the money over. So, my mom moved all of her savings and money over to my account because he had access to hers. He was, like, one of the people, like, where you can tie your accounts to two people. So, shut everything down, closed it all, froze all the credit, froze everything, and moved all the money over to me, because we didn't know how it was that he gotten out. We didn't know how he got that money, and she later realized, oh, he had that check mm-hmm. that was intended for him to go buy me a new car, you know. And also, just for anyone listening who is in a situation where someone's harassing you, you have to absolutely make sure that you tell them to leave you alone. Every time they contact you, tell them to leave you alone, and at some point, just stop responding, after you've gotten the... warrant or restraining order or whatever it is that you got. I got both, because if you have a restraining order and then you respond to them, it makes it null and void. It breaks that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he got arrested. And after that, so there is one big main incident that happens before it ends up being like a bunch of legal bullshit. But this thing, like, first time he gets arrested, first time, and he bails out, and then basically he's out on the loose again doing whatever the fuck he wants. And he then my mom has to start going through the process of like, okay, well, I need to get a divorce now. And we try to go get a family protection order, and the court won't give us one. Mm-hmm. And they won't give me one, they won't give her one, and so we got to go to another court. Like we tried to go do it in Morgan County because that's where we were residents, and then they wouldn't give it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we had
for what reasons? Did they tell you why you couldn't get it?
So my mom tried. She filled out the form and it basically asked you what happened, and she used me as an example. And they were like, "Well, we can't give you one based off of what happened to your daughter."
Oh,
yeah. So then we go to Huntsville City, and they finally give us one. I think it was Huntsville City, Madison County. And so we get the protection order, and we've had him arrested, and then, like, begins the process of, like, my mom and my grandma and me and my friend, every time he initiates contact, filing a police report. We had the police out to our places of work, to our homes, all the time, constantly filing reports against him, build up a paper trail against him. Mm-hmm. And he would do things like, so my mom was trying to divorce him now, so she needed to go get a divorce attorney. She got an attorney downtown, and he started hiring people and also doing it himself, but having people follow us to figure out where the lawyer's office was, what we were doing. He paid people to, like, drive by my grandmother's house at all hours of the night and scare us, like, honk the horns. Like, we would be unloading the groceries at night, and some truck drives by and slows way down floors it, and it's, like, really loud because of the exhaust and the muffler and stuff, and just, like, do crazy things to scare us. And then because we ended up figuring out that his phone, and so he was very, like, technologically inept, like, did not understand it at all, but so all of his, like, accounts online were had to be set up by my mom, mm-hmm. because he's stupid. Mm-hmm. So she created his Gmail account, created his Facebook account, knew his passwords, and his phone was tied to his Google Chrome Gmail account. And Gmail, like, Google Chrome will track your location. Did not know this. And so it tracked his phone. So we could see that through all hours of the night, 5 a.m., 1 a.m., 10 o'clock at night, whatever, all the time, he would drive circles around my grandmother's house, go to my friend's house, drive circles around his house, drive back, drive circles around my grandmother's house, go home, and then do it again every day. Mm-hmm. One day he went up to, like, Tennessee and came back, and that was to, like, kind of set up, like, I wasn't here, I was in Tennessee. Yeah.
Was he just always calling out of work at this point, or how was
he just basically quit his job.
Okay.
And he started selling our stuff on Craigslist. He started selling our washer dryer, our mattresses, this, that, and the other, until we caught him and we, like, notified the court, like, the lawyer, like, stopped selling our shit, and mm-hmm. he, like, had to pull it all off of Craigslist. And
oh my God.
But some of it was already sold.
Yeah.
So he was living off of, like, I think he was selling drugs too. He was selling drugs and selling our things on Craigslist to get by, because he quit his job so he could obsess about us. So he was stalking us, harassing us, having other people do it too. And then we were just constantly in this battle of him harassing us and bothering us trying to get him to stop and trying to just get him to cooperate and let my mom divorce him. And he would just do crazy things, like, he got a divorce attorney, and then it seemed like he was going to try to work it out and, like, be civil and just get a divorce. He started doing crazy things in the middle of us trying to work out this divorce shit, in the middle of a bunch of crime shit at the same time, all the legal things happening. He tried to, like, do some kind of, like, extortion thing, like, telling my mom, send your father up to the house with $44,000 cash and everything will be fine.
What?
And it's like, no, I'm not gonna send you to take my father and her grandfather hostage, like, what? And then calling my mom's attorney's office, laughing maniacally on the phone to the staff. The staff were afraid of him. They didn't ever want him to come into the office. And he did that to his own attorney, not mine. Oh my God, not my mom's. It was his own lawyer. He scared his own lawyer and her staff. And then, like, would call us, or he would call, like, one of his, either his lawyer or our lawyer, and say, I want this divorce finalized like this by 3 o'clock today, or I'm gonna come kill all of you.
Oh my God.
And
so at this point, his attorney, even though he's saying stuff like that to them, they still have to support him and be on his side because of how it works legally.
Yeah, but she was communicating with us, like, I'm so sorry, like, he's nuts, I'm trying my best to keep him under control, I told him not to do this, he's not listening to me, he's scaring my staff. And there was one day, they were supposed to, like, sit down and meet with him, and she had to reschedule because she had another client or something like that. Because she rescheduled, he called and was like, hey, I'm going to kill all of you if you don't have this all done by 3 o'clock. Yeah, so just threats upon threats upon threats. And it was just a month of, like, back and forth, like, divorce stuff, crime stuff. He did this new thing. We got to file that report. We got to, like, document this and collect this evidence and yada, 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 yada. And I'm sure there's a lot of details in there that I'm missing, because it was just every day there was something new. Like, we were armed all the time. We slept with guns. We had guns in the car, guns in our purse all the time. So all of the harassing and threats and living in fear and being armed and trying to get a divorce and him trying to use threats and extortion and all this kind of stuff to just fuck with us, basically. Led to, I had gone back to work, so I was at work when this happened. This was Sunday, April 19th of 2015, and I got the call at 7 o'clock, but at 6 o'clock, my mom and my grandma are at home. My grandma's, like, watching TV, and my mom's grading papers, and they're sitting in the living room next to a set of French doors in the living room. And there's a knock on the door, on that back, that the French doors, it's the back door.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom, my grandma, or no, there's not a knock. My grandma looks up and goes, and my mom hears it, and she looks up, and there's my stepdad at the door. He starts knocking, and they don't do anything, and he starts jiggling the doorknob. And then they don't open it. He starts jiggling it harder and shaking the door.
Does
and
he see them? Does
he sees them. Okay. He's looking at them. And so they get up and my mom's like, you know, telling my grandma, like, Mom, go, call 911, call 911. And so my mom gets up and runs to the bedroom, gets the shotgun. And my grandpa had thought, like, a week later, he had this weird feeling. He's like, I really feel like my mom needs this shotgun, so I'm just gonna bring it to her, like, a week before. And so she runs into the bedroom, gets the shotgun, and she calms herself down for a second and, like, takes a deep breath, and she's like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm doing this correctly. So she checks and makes sure that it's loaded, she checks and makes sure that the safety's off, and that it's a double barrel, so she chooses a barrel. And once you use one, it'll automatically go over to the other one, so you can use it again. So she runs out, and she has the gun, and he's not at the back door anymore. I think he followed her around back to the bedroom window to try to see where she was at. And he had, like, tampered with some kind of, he thought that he had disarmed the alarm system. There was some kind of box outside on the house, and that we ended up seeing that was all ripped up later. It didn't disarm the alarm, thankfully. But, they run back in, and, my grandma had, like, run out into the garage, and she was trying to run outside, like, open the garage door and try to run outside. And my mom's like, no, like, come back in the garage. Like, you don't know if he's going to go around the house, if he's going to be there. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, he is taking the wrought iron patio furniture and busting the back door in. And it's one of those doors, like, that has a deadbolt on it, but there's, it's key only. It's like, you have to unlock it from the inside with a key. You can't just, like, break the window, reach in, and turn mm-hmm. it. So he's trying his best to, like, break it in with the patio furniture, and he ends up forcing his way through the door at some point. And, so my grandma and my mom are in the garage. My grandma had called 911. She tried to set off the house alarm, but it wasn't going off for some reason.
God. When you need it the most.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a 911, like, call recording, and I haven't heard it yet. My mom and my grandmother heard it, and I don't know if I can, because my mom said it was, like, blood-curdling screams. So he ends up entering the home, and the garage door has a door that enters the main, like, foyer of the mm-hmm. house that's by the front door. And so my grandmother is standing, like, if you're walking through that door that goes into the house from the garage, if you see stand straight through that door, my grandmother's, like, standing straight ahead. My mom's standing kind of farther over to the right, more like a 45 degree angle from where she mm-hmm. is. And my stepdad, now I'm gonna try to tell it from my mom's point of view, because I wasn't there, I was at work.
Thank God.
My mom said that the first thing that she sees come around the corner is a gun in his hand, and then he comes around and he's pointing it at my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And my mom yells at him, and she's, like, bellowing, like, this big, deep, like, voice that she didn't even, like, you just don't have any control over it. Just, like, this bellowing, like, big voice comes out of her, and she's like, drop it, and just yelling at him and telling him to stop. And he realizes that he's not pointing the gun at my mom. He sees it's my grandma and starts to move it over to her. And so as his arm is swinging over, and he finally fixates it on her, right before he's about to pull the trigger, she shoots him with the shotgun. And she's not standing super far away from him either. And so he goes down and falls backwards into the house, in the threshold. And my grandma had been on the phone with with 911, but she thought that she had hung up. She didn't know that they were still on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point, my grandma runs across the street to the neighbors to get help. I don't know if she did that before. No, she did that before my mom. No, she was still in there when my mom shot him, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And so she runs across the street to the neighbors to get help. And my mom is standing there in the garage and, like, goes over and stands over him with a gun pointed at him, like, don't you get up, motherfucker, like, starts just yelling and cussing at him, like, don't you dare, how dare you do this, don't you get up, don't you move. And the house alarm finally is going off and blaring, and then she shot a shotgun indoors, so it's really difficult to hear anything. Mm-hmm. And she's just, like, going back and forth, looking out the garage, going back and standing over him, looking out the garage, waiting for the police to get there. And they finally show up, and she's like, oh, thank God the police are here, finally. And they get there, and they start yelling and screaming at her to, like, drop her gun. But she can't hear what they're saying, because the alarm is blaring, and she just shot a gun indoors. Mm-hmm. And all this adrenaline's running. She doesn't understand what's going on. And she's just like, yay, you're here! And they're like, you've got a gun!
Oh, yeah.
And she is standing there, and she starts to bend over to put the gun down. Because if you have a loaded gun, because she only shot him once, and there was still another round left. You don't drop a loaded gun, because if that thing goes off, they're definitely going to shoot you. They're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So she leans down to put the gun on the ground, and then boom, boom, boom. Boom. Four times. The police shoot at her four times. Hit her once.
Oh, my God.
They hit her in her left hip. It, like, went through her hip, through her butt cheek, out the other side.
Oh, my God.
She described it as feeling like someone hit you with a baseball bat. Just, like, brunt, like a brute force hit. And it's two younger police officers that had arrived on the scene. One of them shoots at her. And there's, like, holes in the living room wall, and holes in the washer, dryer, and holes in the quilt, and holes in my mom. And so then they're, like, telling her to get down. So she gets down. She's wearing black pants. And so, like, all these, like, police officers show up, and there's these paramedics and the ambulances and stuff, and they're asking her, like, are you okay? And she's just saying, like, he came here to kill us, he's here to kill us. And they're like, are you okay? And she's like, you shot me. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. And, like, keep running by, because she's, like, wearing black pants, and they can't see that she's bleeding. And she's, like, laying on the ground. They're like, look, we don't know what's going on, we need to handcuff you. And she's like, okay, fine. So she's laying down, face down in the garage, and there's a picture of it online. It pisses me off. My mom's actually kind of like, that's a good picture of me. I'm like, what? So she's bleeding, and her glasses fell off, and they step in her glasses, and they keep asking her if she's okay, and she's like, you shot me. And they're like, well, okay. And then they put him on the stretcher and in the ambulance first. His injuries are more severe, but, you know,
he's also shot.
So, okay, my mom shot him with a shotgun with, like, buckshot on his right side. He was holding a gun, and this also proved very helpful in the court case afterward, because, like, one of the pellets from the shot went through his hand into the pistol, and actually it made the clip fall out of the gun, and it proved the trajectory. It proved that he was pointing the gun at her because of the trajectory of that pellet going through his hand into the gun. And so he was shot on his right hand, right arm, chest, and, like, he had, like, a punctured lung and, like, a collapsed lung and stuff like that. And he was just bleeding out everywhere. So they load him on the ambulance first, and then my mom. But, like, to get her out of the way so they could get him out of there, they drag her by her injured leg across the carpeted driveway, or, like, garage floor, and, like, had this huge rug burn on her stomach, and then pulled her by her injured leg, stepped on her glasses, couldn't see anything, and then sent her to the hospital. And my grandma's across the street at the neighbor, and there's investigators trying to question her, and my neighbor's trying to answer the questions for her because she's in shock and can't answer fucking questions.
Yeah.
And then my grandma calls me, and I'm at work, and it's, like, an hour before I get off work, and she's like, you know, your stepdad broke in, your mom's been shot, I think they're sending her to Huntsville Hospital, I don't really know. And I'm just like, okay. And I was, like, in total shock. I am, like, the person who's, like, cool as a cucumber in a crisis. And so it must have looked really strange to everyone around me at work, because I was, like, really calm.
Mm-hmm.
So I got off the phone, and I just looked at someone and said, my mom's been shot. I think I need to go now. Can we get someone to cover the front desk? And they wouldn't let me drive to the hospital on my own. They made someone, like, drive me. And they brought me there, and the woman who went with me was very sweet, and she kind of could tell that I was a little, like, freaked out. And so I get to the hospital that I think she's at, but I don't really know, and I ask them, like, hey, where's my mom? They're like, we can't tell you.
Oh, my God.
We don't, like, they were not able to tell me, because it was, and not just a hospital admission, like, oh, I ate a peanut, and, you know, it's like, I it's associated with a crime, and they can't disclose any information until the scene has been wrapped up and the investigators come to the hospital and clear everything, which I didn't know that at the time. I was just fucking pissed. And so they tell me, they won't tell me what hospital she's at. They won't tell me what condition she's in, who shot her, what happened, if she's okay. I didn't know where she was. And so I'm just sitting in this private room, and eventually I think one of the officers comes in, and finally I think they were just like, we got to tell her something. And so they kind of hint, wink, wink, didn't directly tell me, but they're like, she's here at this hospital, finally, after a couple hours. And then I just ended up sitting out in the emergency room for a long time. So, like, I got that call at 7. He broke in at 6. I didn't see my mom until, like, 11:30 at night or something like that. And I was sitting in the emergency room. My brother drove up from Anniston. One of my friends came and sat with me, one of my girlfriends. And then the friend of mine that was involved in all this, the guy, he showed up, and he was not being any help at all, just cracking jokes and stuff. Which, you know, he handles things with humor, but I was like, dude, not cool. I don't know if my mom's dead or not. She just got shot, and I don't even know who shot her. I think my stepdad shot her. I'm pretty sure he did. And he's just, like, cracking jokes. I was pissed. So I'm in the emergency room, and I'm calling, you know, lawyers and family and friends, and trying to tell everyone what the fuck happened. And I'm like, I want to sue the city because they, did this, that, and the other. Because it took me a while to figure out that the police shot my mom, not my stepdad. So, yeah, I had no idea if she was okay, even what hospital she was at, for a while. And I was just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And while, all the while, the police are at my grandmother's house taking note of things, taking pictures of all the bullet holes and the walls and doors and shit like that. And at some point, I think I ended up speaking to an officer. An officer came by and talked to me, and I was like, did you see a cat? Did you see a cat at the house? Like, my first concern was, is my mom okay? The second one was, where's my cat? And so they're like, yeah, there's a cat. We locked her in one of the bedrooms. Like, okay, good. Because I was like, if I had, like, also lost my cat, I was just gonna be devastated. So we eventually, they allow one person to go back into, like, the main part of the hospital and see my mom, and I was like, it has to be me, because me and my mom, like, she's my best friend. Mm-hmm. And not just one of those moms who is like, oh, my mom's my best friend, but she's like a shitty mom because mm-hmm. she's my best friend. It's like, no, she's an amazing mom, puts me in my place, but she's also my best friend.
Yeah.
So I went back and saw her, and I just needed to see her face to make sure she was okay. And she's laying out in the hallway because they didn't have a room for her. And, you know, she made sure that they kept her and him on separate ends, like, in separate rooms. Didn't know, and she didn't want him to know where in the hospital she was and all that kind of stuff. And trying to make sure that, like, he doesn't sign up under her insurance and have the insurance cover his injuries and stuff. Because, like, dude, you fucking came and tried to kill me. I'm not mm-hmm. covering your injuries. So I get back there, and me and my mom are cracking jokes about being shot. We're like, shot in the ass, and you're too late, you give love a bad name. And, like, all this kind of, like, yeah, they shot me in the buttocks, like Forrest Gump and stuff. Because we're just like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad you're not dead. And eventually they release her, and she gets up off the stretcher, and she's hobbling around, and I'm like, mom, you're leaking. Because, like, her bullet wound was leaking. I had to go get someone to dress it more and whatever. So then finally the investigators are like, okay, we've wrapped everything up. You can go back to your home, which is destroyed now. And so my brother and my grandpa go back to the house, and actually I think I got there first, but they board up all the windows and doors that were broken into so that people can't get in. And there's, like, all these bugs in the house now, because it's, like, spring. And I just remember kind of, I feel weird for this, but we had been spending months documenting and taking evidence and, like, making sure that we got all the information we needed. And the court system had kind of not really been good to us. It's kind of screwing us over. Like, it's, the justice system is not really designed well to protect victims of crimes.
Yeah.
It's not. It's designed to protect their own asses. Sucks. So we had to be extra careful about everything. So even though the police came and took pictures of everything, I was going in there like, whoa, what the fuck? And I started, like, I have pictures on my computer of all the blood on the floor from my stepdad, and all the bullet holes in the doors. And there was even a bullet hole from when the one that my mom shot at him. There was, like, he was a very hairy man. And it's, like, one of his, like, back hairs was in the hole in the door where the bullet went through.
Wow.
Just, I don't know, weird. I just, like, I needed to go see the house and see what the deal was, because I wasn't there when it happened. And it's like, okay, this person who's been torturing me for years and, like, psychologically fucking with me is now possibly not going to live. And he tried to kill everyone, and now the house is fucked up. And So I don't know. I think I was like, not laughing, but I was just like, oh my God, look at that. Isn't that weird? Not like, oh no, this is horrible. I was just like, hey, look at all that blood. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Like shock, do you think?
Yeah, I guess so. It just didn't bother me because I was so detached mm-hmm. from this person. I hated him so much. I was like almost enjoying that all of his blood was out there on the floor and it was like leaking under the door frame out into the front of the house. And like,
wow.
I was just like, because I had been, like, hoping and praying for years that something would happen to him, that this motherfucker would die mm-hmm. of natural causes or something. Because I couldn't report him to DHR. I couldn't do anything. Because how do you tell someone that they need to, like, get rid of him if he's not beating you or something?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that he had been emotionally and mentally abusing me. So I was taking great, great joy and pride in the fact that my mom shot his ass. And he had, like, almost bled out, and there's that whole thing, like, good thing she only shot him once, because then they, like, it was like, yeah, obviously self-defense, but if she had used that other round, then they could have tried to put a court case against her of, like, attempted murder on her part, even though, because the court system, we found out the justice system is that fucked up.
Oh my gosh. So even if she would have killed him, like, it probably would have gone a completely different way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They could have tried to charge her. So, luckily, she only shot him once, and, like, it was completely out of self-defense, and she didn't want it to come to that at all, you know, but that's, she told me, she was like, you know, in that moment where you have to choose, it's either me or them, it's so easy to choose me. She did not hesitate. She was like, I didn't even know that I pulled that trigger, it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, he's down. Yeah, that's basically the main thing that happened, and after it is just a lot of, like, miscellaneous details of... We went and stayed at my grandmother's friend's house for, like, 5 days, and investigators came out and talked to us and interviewed us about what happened so we could start building the case against him. We have all these misdemeanor charges, and now we've got 3 felony charges, first-degree burglary, like, menacing or something, and then violation of a family protection order, and then there was, I think, maybe enough harassing communications charges had built up to where it was finally a felony. And we wanted to get him for attempted murder, but because a round never left the chamber of his pistol, we couldn't. It would be possible that he could get off on some kind of technicality, so we charged him with the thing that we could most likely get him put away for, which was first-degree burglary, even though it really was attempted murder, so that pissed me off.
So where is he now?
He's in prison. It took us... So that was in 2015. It took us until January of 2017 of multiple court cases with the city, the county, different judge, this judge, that judge, and trying to get this divorce in the middle of all of that because they still weren't divorced. It took until January of 2017 to finally get him sentenced. It was a 3-day trial. I wasn't allowed to sit in on it until the last day because they were going to use me as a witness, and they decided not to use me as a witness. So I finally got to go in on the last day. My friend, Shaturia, the my friend that I was telling you about earlier, came in and sat with me and held my hand and stuff. And I got to see my mom finally, because she wasn't allowed to address him for months because of the protection order. You can't talk back because it violates the order. Nulls it or nullifies it. And so I finally got to see her stand up there and just look at him and really look him in the eyes and be like, why did you do this? You had every opportunity to just let me go. You could have just let me go. We could have ended this peacefully. We could have just gotten a divorce and it could have been okay. Why couldn't you just let the fuck go? Why did you have to come after me? Why did you have to threaten us and try to kill all of us? I don't understand. And just finally say something to him, and I was so proud of her.
So did he play the game of being, like, charming to the mm-hmm. court system? Okay.
Oh, he tried so hard, like, oh, I'm a poor, old, injured man, I'll be, you know, disabled for life, and I just loved my wife, and I just wanted everything to be okay, and these children, you know, took everything from me, and... You know, I just really wanted to work things out, and he tried to claim that he came over to the house that day when he broke in. He just wanted to talk. Okay, first of all, who the fuck comes over to talk with a Glock with 3 loaded clips, which means 30 rounds of ammunition, and a machete? So was he gonna cut all our fingers off or something? And also, oh my God, there's even like a whole other like thing behind the break-in. It wasn't just the break-in. He has a pilot's license. He's got a friend who lives in Costa Rica who makes money off an online gambling business. He had $1,000 in cash on him. He shaved his beard, had a taxi driver pick him up from like the Walmart nearby, dropped him off at the house, and then told the guy to go park a little ways down the street or down at the Walmart and wait for him. when he had his, I think he had a passport, and he had a pilot's license, and he had $1,000 in cash on him. He had the guns and the ammunition and the machete, and he had also been, like, talking, like, having an intimate relationship with, like, an ex-wife of his that he was planning to, like, kind of, he was basically planning to run away. He was going to kill my mom and my grandmother, then he was going to come find me and my friend and kill us, and then he was going to get a plane and fly it to Costa Rica and go live with his friend and that woman. This happened in Huntsville, Alabama,
oh my God,
to a white middle-aged chemistry teacher and her grand and her daughter and mother.
You would this is kind of off point, but you would never guess that about you. You seem so well put together.
You cannot guess who or when or what or how things will happen.
Right. Well, I have three questions.
Yeah.
First question is, did he ever admit to any of this?
No.
Second question is, okay. Second question is, like, did the court end up, I don't know how this works exactly, because I know the court is not, like, a psychiatric system, but did they ever end up giving him anything to do with, like, mental illness? Well, how would you say that?
Yeah, they have to give him an evaluation.
Okay.
So, the thing is, like, he didn't get off on insanity, which is great, because he's not insane. He's not mentally, we needed to be very careful about the verbiage we use, because, like, calling him crazy, like, yes, what he did was crazy, but he's completely in his right mind. He's just fucked up. And everything that he did was completely premeditated. He even got the gun that he tried to kill everyone with from a former police officer in, like, Jefferson County, who's a nephew of his, and, like, went and got that gun and tried to get guns from, like, he had given my brother a gun a long time ago, and he tried to get that back from my brother, and then, you know, having the money and the taxi driver and all the plans that he had with that woman that he was trying to get away with, like, everything was very premeditated. Like, he came there with a plan. But
how long is he in jail now?
Okay, so,
and, like, what was the charge that put him in jail? I don't know if you already said that.
I think it was harassing communications, violation of her protection order, and the big one was first-degree burglary. Armed burglary.
Yeah.
And that put him away. They sentenced him to 40 years.
So how is your mom holding up? I mean, do you feel like you can speak about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me and my mom are still super close, and we've all talked about this throughout all of the, through the current threat and then through all the court stuff, and just, like, you know, it brought us all closer together, and they understood why I was such a horribly angsty teenager, you know, why I was so just closed off and aggressive and just, you know, miserable all the time. They didn't understand. So now they know. And but she and my grandma, they both, like, all three of us have PTSD for different reasons. They both are like, he broke in and tried to kill us. We're afraid of loud noises, and they're really jumpy. Anytime someone knocks at the door, it scares them and stuff like that. And they both went to therapy immediately after. And luckily, the city, when this kind of crime happens, and it's, like, kind of now this him versus the city, that's how the court case was. It wasn't him versus us. It's him versus the city. They provide free therapy for the victims, which is great. And they while all this stuff was happening, they were freaking out, losing their shit. My mom could barely eat. She lost, like, 15 pounds. And it was very stressful on them, and they were just super jumpy all the time. Then it was over, and they calmed down. They're like, God, that's over. Went to therapy and, you know, started dealing with that, doing that EMDR therapy and talking things out and understanding, you know, everything that they're feeling and working through it, and they ended up feeling a lot better. And there's still lingering effects. It'll be with them forever. You know, someone broke in and tried to fucking kill them. You know, that's
Well, then when they started feeling better, he got out again. So it's like, they spend this time healing. You spend this time healing, and then all of a sudden.
And I did not go to therapy instantly after. And I'm the person who was keeping my cool the whole time, cool as a cucumber the whole time during the crisis, because I had been handling this man for the better part of a decade. And I was very, and it also, it felt strange to me, because I was like, this was my thing before. Like, I had control over it. It was isolated to me, and I handled it, and I didn't have to, like, let it spread to anybody else. And now, all of a sudden, it's out of control, and it's spread, and now it's affecting everyone else, and now it's their problem, too. But it was my problem, and I had it under control, and I had a handle on it, and now I don't. And, you know, but the whole time, I was just like, I was the person who's like, look, I know this man, I know, like, they were like, is he gonna do this, is he not, is he gonna come after us if he's not, and I was like, yeah, Yeah, I know who we're talking about. You don't know him. Mm-hmm. You slept in the same bed with him. You didn't know him. Mm. You know, he did not show you who he was. Mm-hmm. And so I was the one who was just keeping it cool and like, I know who we're dealing with. And I've been here before, and I could predict all the stuff that was happening. I knew he was going to come and do everything that he was going to do. I didn't know all the details and exactly how, but I knew it was coming. And after it was over, that's when I started freaking out. It was like a few months after him getting arrested, the final, like the main time after that main incident, and us waiting for the trial to come and going through all the other little misdemeanor charge trials. A few months after, I just started feeling like really weird. Like I would be fine one moment, and then the next I would just be really sad or really angry or really anxious and out of nowhere. And it, like, I remember one day I was, now at this point my friend, who, you know, had the guy that my stepfather was so fixated on, he and I had finally like started dating by this point. And so he was my boyfriend at the time now, and I remember I was like, I left my grandmother's house. I was still living with her, and I was driving to his house on the other end of town. And when I left her house, I felt fine. I was like, yay, gonna go hang out with him. Like, and by the time I got to his house, totally different mood. Mm-hmm. Felt really down and just like irritable, and I didn't understand why. And then we got in a fight about it because he didn't understand why I was being difficult, and just, mm-hmm. And it would just like, just come in these waves, and like for a few months I'd be fine, and then like it would just like waves of weird emotions would come up. And finally, like a year after that, I had to start, maybe 2 years after that, I think the I don't know if the case had happened already, but eventually I went to therapy and the city provided it, and I went for about 6 months. And because it got to the point where I had so much anxiety all the time that I there was multiple times where I would just lay in bed for hours trying to get my heart rate to slow down, trying to breathe. And I couldn't get my heart to slow down and chill out. And I didn't understand what was going on. And just, mm-hmm. like, I didn't understand that I had PTSD. I thought I was fine. Because mm-hmm. my mom and my grandma, I totally got it. You know, like, they had this very traumatic, specific, isolated event happen. And I didn't realize that I had had it from years and years and years of manipulation mm-hmm. and abuse and terror just in my everyday life. Mm-hmm. Did not understand it. I thought it was for people who go in the military, you know? There was that, and the therapy helped with that, but I only went for like 6 months, and she kind of couldn't really see through my bullshit of like at the end where she was like, oh, well, you seem to be doing so much better. I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm great. No. And so, you know, I've always been an anxious person. So I'm still kind of, I know I need to go back, 'cause I'm still kind of struggling with that. Just, certain like things in conversation, things in relationships. My experience with PTSD and all those traumatizing things really affect my romantic relationships. So
I was gonna ask, if it like changes not only your romantic relationships, but just the way that you see men in general.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm always trying to make sure that no one's taking advantage of me, that I'm not letting someone have power over me. I never want to let someone have influence over me and my decisions in my life. And so I'm always trying constantly to buck and not let anyone control me. Even if they're not trying to control me, I'm just like, never again will I ever let someone tell me who I am and what I'm doing and what I can or cannot do and like make me feel that way ever again. I didn't ever think that I'd go from like this really shy, reclusive person who was just like angry at the world and had no confidence in you know, my abilities. And I didn't even think I was going to make it to 25. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was going to be here. And I definitely didn't think that I was going to have so many close, wonderful friends and be pursuing my dream as a musician and be in like a fucking 10-person funk and soul band. Like, you know, that's cool.
It is cool. Talk about it a little bit and tell people how they can find you.
So I've been in the Quantaphonics now since May of 2017, and we started playing in Huntsville mm-hmm. January of this year, 2018.
And since you've played, like, how many shows do you even know? It seems like every time I go on social media, counted.
We've played in Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, Florence, Birmingham. We've got our first Nashville gig in January coming up. And we've played, like, we started, our first gig was at Voodoo Lounge on January 26th. Mm-hmm. So our 1 year anniversary of playing in Huntsville has come up. So, but we've been playing in Huntsville, and like we've been playing all the local bars downtown. We've played at Funk Fest, at Spice Fest, at the Wine Fest.
Wow.
We've done some radio interviews with WJAB and WLRH.
What is your social media?
So you can find us at Quantaphonics on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It used to be The Quantaphonics, but we dropped the D. Should I spell it? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, do it just in case.
It's Quantaphonics. Quantaphonics. And we have two debut singles that we released on October 19th, and they're available on all digital platforms. So wherever it is that you stream or buy music, it's going to be on there. Just search Quantaphonics, and it's Good Time in Hollywood.
I've never in my life, even if it's like a band that I've seen with a huge venue, you know, like in Nashville that's very established or something like that, I've never really seen a band that's just so connected. Like, the way that you all riff off of one another, it's like you really all give each other time to shine and to show up in your own way and bring your own element and bring your own taste to it. And I just love that. I think it's super inspiring. I would love to have a group of people that's that big and they just all bring something cool to it. It feels amazing.
I never thought that I would be so lucky.
Okay, one more thing. Mm-hmm. If there's anyone listening to this who is possibly going through a situation similar to yours, anything similar, just some sort of violence or some sort of trauma or some sort of situation where they feel isolated and they don't really feel like they have anyone that they can talk to, do you have any advice or anything that, like, you kind of wish that you knew when you were going through it? And you still are going through it, obviously, but, like how can you see the light, you know?
I would say the main thing where I went wrong was not having the understanding of what was happening to me. And so I would say it's very important to open your eyes and really understand that you don't have to be beaten or raped to be abused. It doesn't, if it feels wrong, it probably is. You're not being overly dramatic or sensitive, or, you know, if someone is just coming at you with all this bullshit and, like, you know you're not doing it, you know this isn't right, trust your intuition. And I think, you know, I didn't realize that what I was going through was called domestic violence, was classified as that, until we got in the court system and that's what they started calling it. I was like, what? That's what this is? That's what it's been the whole time? Why? If I had known that, the power behind that knowledge could have ended it so much sooner. But it had to play out the way that it did. I know that it did. But it's I would say just being educated on what the signs are, what to look for, and really make note of what's happening to you and how, like, just know what it is that's happening. That's the big thing that got me to where in such a place of despair, is I had no knowledge of what was happening to me at all. I just knew that I was feeling so bad all the time and didn't have a source really to point at, like, I know this person's doing it, but I can't get them in trouble.
Yeah.
I would also say, if you get to the point where you do recognize what's happening, you start trying to get out of it, there is danger, and making sure that you do everything by the book, like, do all the right shit that you're supposed to, file the police reports, document everything, collect evidence, keep yourself safe. Don't just trust the justice system and the police officers to keep you safe, because clearly, or if we had not, like, armed ourselves, if we had just trusted that they would keep, everyone would be dead right now, because they showed up after he would have pulled the trigger.
Yeah, but also just don't take it to your own hands, because if you do, like, then you don't have...
take it all into your own hands. It's like, do the paperwork, collect the evidence, document everything, build a case against them, make sure that your local justice system is aware of what's going on in your situation, but also protect yourself. And it's just, it's amazing, horribly amazing, how often things like this happen. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea. And we saw story after story after story about this kind of stuff after it happened to us. And we realized, like, wow, most people don't survive this.
And another point that I thought was important is you said, and even before you saying this, this is something that I know, it's not just the demographics that you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, so much of the violence that I have heard about, or the stories that I've heard, or stories of death, or overdose, or suicide, or anything, domestic violence, like, it just does not discriminate. Well, thank you for being brave enough to come on here and share this outrageous story. It really is unlike anything that I've ever heard before in my entire life.
Wow.
And I just feel lucky that you are willing to share that with us, because I know that a lot of people would not want to open that door up again, probably, but you're still experiencing this to this day.
Yeah, it's still alive.
It's not closed,
I mean, thank you for having me here, and I'm really thankful that I'm here to tell it, and I feel like it'd be kind of selfish if I if I just kept it to myself and didn't share it.
Before we go, I just wanted to provide a resource for anyone who's going through any domestic abuse or violence. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. We love you guys.